Are you guys ready for SummerSlam?
Cleveland! Are you ready? Because the biggest party of the summer starts for the thousands in attendance, for the millions watching around the world. Welcome to SummerSlam! Right now!
Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, also give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keep Against Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown with the AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes of, yeah, it's fine, wasn't it? It's fine. Hottest takes here. They're through hottest takes. I'm talking about SummerSlam. So live from the Cleveland Browns Stadium in Cleveland, Ohio. A kind of mixed reception than it. The WWE fans, it seemed to be that they got served this week with a delicious meal that they absolutely just nom, 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 nom. Eat it right down. They absolutely loved it. Whilst if you're more of a person who watches wrestling for the wrestling rather than like the moments or the storylines, whatever, you wouldn't have enjoyed this SummerSlam. I saw it in the different chats and groups that I'm in and the different communities, like especially in the G1 Climax era where they are eating good. You got the G1 Climax serving up amazing matches. Today, the day of the recording, on the Thursday this week, we had Zack Sabre Jr. versus Gabe Kidd. So obviously me from Nottingham, I'd be like, hey, Gabe Kidd, hey. But SummerSlam was about storylines and moments more than it was about serving up any high quality matches or whatever. And maybe we can go into that like a little bit when we properly dig in a bit more. But yeah, it's an interesting reception. Anyway, let's jump on in and let's start off with the biggest story. Let's talk about the main event of SummerSlam, the return of Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes versus Solo Sikoa in the main event of SummerSlam. Take it away, me.
How is Cody Rhodes doing this?
But Solo wisely, instinctively or otherwise, rolling away.
Get your kids in order, father's home. Down comes Roman Reigns. Bish bash bosh, off he pops. Leaves. Cody Rhodes holds the title. Big old stare down as we possibly do Cody Rhodes Roman Reigns 3 years in a row. I mean, I feel like if they're in any era where they might try it and then they'll big it up as like this huge thing where every single time they're more and more over, that's how they'll definitely talk about it in the future documentaries. I feel like this is possibly, if they're going to ever do it, it feels like stars are kind of aligning. Unless The Rock's free. And then he's doing Roman Rock. No questions there whatsoever. Roman running in to have a word with his cousin, like, oi mate, what the fuck? The crowd chanted FU Solo loudly from the right at the start. Honestly, as I was watching it, it's like, honestly, that's probably a good sign. Hating him was the number one chant, instead of the crowd just immediately chanting for Roman and only Roman in regards to Sikoa, which is a kind of, if you've not been watching WWE, that is a change of pace on the show. They've been chanting for Roman constantly during his matches, but over the course of time they've been able to sway it. The fans have actually got invested in his character enough to say FU Solo. It seemed to be a joint sentiment. It's not just me. If only they'd built him up before. They built him up a bit before WrestleMania. They'd done part of that with the John Cena thing. Solo was just seen as this huge dominant guy. The fans were kind of behind him in terms of wanting to see him do something. And then they just started giving him losses and kind of took his momentum away from him. They're like in a really weird place where they started doing that with Damian Priest as well, just before they gave him his big push. Like, I don't understand it. Well, if you're going to give someone like a big push, or they're going to get their big moment, you instead take away their momentum to build up other people, because that guy is going to get that moment and that's going to rocket him back up. And in theory, that then means he's got either people to face or other people were given momentum. But that means you're giving someone a moment without momentum. And that's never made any sense to me. It never made any sense. In the Vince world, where it was almost like the 3-week pushes and whatever, that kind of story, that kind of way of building a character, it fit in. I'm not going to say it made sense, but it fit in. In this world, where you're looking at much, much longer term stuff, it sticks out more. When you take away the momentum just before something, it sticks out a lot more. It's taken all of the summer for us to finally reach the point in what they might have been at from the get-go, with them chanting FU Solo instead of just FU We Want Roman, building him throughout the course of the match as well. It hit all the beats you're expecting. And that's my review for SummerSlam. It hit every single beat. I've probably got it written later on in one of the matches. But this was the show of. They told us what they were going to do, and they did it. And then the show ended. Like, if you've watched the TV product, you would have seen them telling you what it is they're going to be doing. And you watched the show, and they did it. And for some fans, they were really happy and excited to see that. They got what they wanted. This show is what they wanted. For me, it just felt a bit flat. So I needed something more. But this main event match was, it bubbled along fine. Like, nothing crazy, it was just okay. Solo, for me, in this match, I was absolutely fine in his role. It's the main event at SummerSlam, so you want something more than that. But there's a bit of the caveat that everybody's just waiting for Roman. And Solo, because he hasn't been built up early enough before his turn, meaning they had to do it during the turn, means that he's not a credible threat to Cody. And the fact that you're waiting for Roman as well makes him even less of a credible threat. So as this match is going on, it's really difficult to get invested. And at no point did I ever believe there was going to be a fake fall or whatever. This is where the actual, like, the wrestling part of the show comes into critique, just because I never believed, not in one moment, and I'm just waiting for Roman Reigns. But really, I'm watching this entire main event to just listen to a pop. What happens when the pop stops? I'm watching the match to wait for a pop. And to be fair, yeah, pretty good pop. I'm not going to lie. I was watching this match for a pop. Got myself a pretty decent pop. So I was fed. I was fed. Also, it was Bloodline Rules, allowing the Gorillas out to beat down Cody as the match jumped into just repeating what they did at WrestleMania, but with current lads instead. KO out first, stomping on folk. It's still versus 3 versus 2, though. Orton properly evening the odds. Jacob Fatu answering the question, where's Jacob Fatu? By interrupting Cody Rhodes with a third crossroads swing. He waited until Solo had been steel steps clobbered and already hit with two crossroads first, but you know, he got there eventually. Cody on his lonesome against Solo and Fatu as the announce table is set for destruction. Big splash. Fatu holding his leg instantly, and I thought it was really good selling. It was one of those gut reaction holding onto the leg type of things where I could totally believe somebody else being like, oh crap, is he actually? That sucks. Whilst my instinct reaction was, that's such a good sell that I totally believe you're not getting up for Roman coming out. I thought he did really well there. Like, oh damn, this Fatu is too good. He's too good. He's that good at convincingly selling an injury as well. Like, oh no, he's that good. Oh no, he can do big guys jumping all over the place. He can also do the more detailed Daniel Bryan sicko kind of selling, like where you can probably convince me. It's like, oh no. All that before, babyface Roman, I say new theme, it's now his full, like, Dark Souls one from WrestleMania. No false pretense or faking an acknowledgement tease, just straight into Superman punch and spear to Solo, off he pops. Looks exchanged between Cody and Roman before that final crossroads for the win. A nice touch with Cody absolutely refusing to let his eyes off of Reigns. The only problem is, I see that as a directly, like, we're going to do Bloodline for Survivor Series. But, once that's done, You have told the viewer there to get excited for Roman Reigns Cody 3. That's what that ending does. What I'm expecting is The Rock to come out at either Survivor Series or the Royal Rumble or something. But you've teased Roman Cody 3. It's crazy watching the WrestleMania documentary when they're talking about the Royal Rumble and then Cody's doing the thing like, I'm going to be challenging you, and da, 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 da. And the story they were telling throughout the WWE documentary was like, no, the plan was Roman Rock. I'm just like, I'm sorry. So you had Cody win because you were like, this still should be the guy to win, but you had no idea what match you were going to do. That, for me, that's absolutely crazy. I bring that up for a reason, because then you look at this here, and even though they're doing the on-screen stuff of telling me to get excited for Roman versus Cody, that's what that says. Those two saying like that, that's like, we're going to be doing this again. And I really do feel like the WWE fans will properly be up for it. I generally believe babyface Roman versus big, huge champion Cody, they could maybe finally crown babyface Roman as champion. I think the fans will buy it. That said, there's going to be a massive push for Rock Roman, and they might just do that. When Roman doesn't need bubbling at all, but it's the big match, then they weren't able to do it this time, and it feels most natural from WrestleMania, but it now no longer feels the most natural from SummerSlam because they did this tease. They've got a lot of time to like convince me of other worlds, because right now Cody doesn't have anyone who could be a WrestleMania type of guy. But the main event was absolutely fine. It was all about the returns. Yeah, you got Kevin Owens, you got Randy Orton, and then of course you got Roman Reigns as they repeated the WrestleMania thing. Felt like a much more lower key one, like this is one for the current fans rather than the like, more loose watching WWE fans that WrestleMania is. But the match itself was, like, it was all right. I think that's the massive difference is in the Cody Roman one, you were living in a world where either man could win and you generally didn't know which one it was going to be and all the odds were against Cody. This time, you never for one second believe Sokoa was winning. So it's like the main reason you're watching is for the Undertaker pop rather than you get the Undertaker pop, but you also get the big massive Cody Euphoria win. And for me, that sums up the entire show. The character notes coming out of it, I feel like they're great for the television, they're great for where the stuff is going forward. The way it actually happened on the show, some of the baby faces just look a little bit dumb, which Triple H did so... I heard Trish and Sarah were talking about this week on their podcast. They've done so well in that almost like first year and a bit with Triple H, where they really started to turn the tide and start to actually book their heroes to be smart people again, where a lot of the dumbassery too, which kind of just became part of beats of this is how you do it, it started to be written away. The big face started to look like actual smart human beings who had a brain that could think. On this show, we saw quite a few dumb baby face stuff. The easiest one to talk about is the one I'm about to talk about now with the Rhea Ripley stuff, where just, what are you doing, Rhea? What are you doing? So actually, before I get into that one, I would just say, in terms of the structure of the show as well, like watching a WWE pay-per-view live, like, it's not great. It's nowhere near as bad as an Englishman watching Raw live. Good God, like, don't ever do that. I know sometimes you get excited or something big is about to be happening in the whole world of wrestling. And it's like, no, I do need to tune in for this. And then you watch Raw live, and it's like, no, I don't need to tune in for this. No. It's all right. But SummerSlam, with it being on Peacock still, there is that stop-start momentum to the show. There's the huge breaks because, of course, if you're on Peacock Premium, you can now watch this. That means you get like 5-minute gaps naturally between every single match. But then they also want the downtime fluff for everybody, so everybody gets a little bit of downtime. So you got almost like 5 minutes either side of that, which means between almost every match is 15 minutes of nothing. It's great for me. I'm making loads of notes, and sometimes I need to catch up. Sometimes I'm like, crap, I need to get a drink at some point. But here I am just trying to catch up on my notes or whatever. So I'm thankful for the gaps in between the matches and things. Got huge gaps between every single match, meaning I'm always caught up. I even have time to think of a line or something just to go back, and I was like, oh. The main event one was like, oh, that was a bit too long. If with the finish of the Finn Balor interruptions into the Damian Priest and Gunter match, between that bell and the bell starting for the next match was 30 minutes. I mean, I like the entrances. I like enjoying the entrances. They really milked them for the main event. But even then, there'd already been 20 minutes of nothing. Before the long entrances, there'd already been a long period of nothing. So the entrances actually feel like something. Like, oh God, I like getting into the zone. I like getting into the aura and the atmosphere. I like a long entrance. But the thing that they did differently this time was they kicked off with fluff. Or never mind the fluff you're going to be getting in between stuff. Never mind all those interruptions just waiting in between matches where you've got huge gaps of nothing. We had Jelly Roll, who kicked off the show and introduced us to SummerSlam by doing his America sing song. Then Triple H came out and he introduced us to SummerSlam with a big welcome to SummerSlam WrestleMania-esque introduction. And then he got the lad to sing the song for the show. The video package played over the top of the man singing, like flicking in like a Paul Atreides vision over the live performance. Which I was like, it's something different. Yeah, I'm not going to complain too much about a music performance kicking off the show after an already America, then Triple H welcoming us, then he does the theme of the show. But it's instead of the video package playing for SummerSlam with the song, you instead get a live performance of it and it plays over. It's a different way of doing it, and I like watching a show and it feeling different. I don't mind that. But after him, because of course they then needed to get all the band equipment out of the ring, The Miz then was in the crowd to introduce us to SummerSlam. We've been introduced to this show 4 times. Ridiculous. He killed a minute of time whilst he cleared the ring. He swung into Ripley finally coming out. 10 minutes in and our first contestant is on the apron of the ring. It's like, oh God, so much fluff and nothing. I know some people saw it as like it made the show feel bigger. Pomp and circumstance means that you're almost putting the show on a pedestal, just you're making it seem a lot more special. But also, it's a whole lot of nothing. 10 minutes is too long. There's a to and fro, like you can have some time to build it up. WrestleMania's always had the America the Beautiful to kick it off, and that separates it from the rest of the shows. But the actual match of Liv Morgan versus Rhea Ripley.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
I've been pretty down on this feud. I was actually just excited to just watch them wrestle and just be allowed to do a wrestling. So when this match was very storyline, very shenanigan-y, very much settling on the Rhea Ripley doing the stuff with her arm injury, and I was just like, oh, that kind of sucks. Because when they were allowed to just properly do a wrestling in the ring, they were great. Like the, I think it was a crucifix bomb at one point, which looked absolutely amazing. there were quite a few moves in this match where both of them were like setting for the opponent looking amazing. Like both of them came across really, really well, just because of how well they were doing for each other in the ring. So when they were actually allowed to wrestle, I really enjoyed it. It's just that, you know, the stuff over the top of it, because I've not been into the storyline anyway, meaning that when watching this match, like, I've been recording for weeks, I know what the end point is, and it feels like once it gets to that end point, we can actually finally kick forward. But yeah, it's fair to say WWE's soap opera dramatics aren't always for me. In a couple of years' time, Jade Cargill just flexing at Rhea Ripley is all the drama I need. Literally, she just walks into the ring and flexes, and Rhea Ripley does some sort of kind of like, yeah, boy, kind of scream. Like, I'm in. I don't need any more than that. I don't need anything more. The first part of this match showing Rhea and Dom working well as a unit way too much. Ringside antics eventually overcome into a swift riptide onto the apron. Oh no, it was into the turnbuckle, sorry. It's out, cries Ripley for no fucks given from any doctor. Like, at least try to convince me, Trips. At least have one ringside person be like, you sure? Like, oh, you're right. It's just nothing. Just absolutely nothing. First, the ringside shenanigans slowed the opening down. Yeah, okay, fine. Then the sending of the shoulder kept it that way. It's like, okay, right. A live suicider dove right into Dom, and huzzah, not in a sexy way, just in a wrestling way. Rejoice, rejoice. Ripley shunting her shoulder into the announce table, shunting it back into socket and immediately lamping in, running right with a dropkick. More than once, the challenger easily setting up her finisher, only for the champion to wriggle out. A real nice low spin kick from Ripley swung us into the prison block shortly after, ending with her weakly being sent into the corner shoulder first to break that. Liv finally getting her moment to damage and work the arm, an awesome looking crucifix pin behind too. That's when that happened. Ripley sure is bloody good at this wrestling thing. The final flow swinging between Ripley's power and Liv's antics to damage the arm further. Deal chair in hand, and it's time for more shoulder into socket antics, kicking the chair away and finally riptiding, going for a chair swing of revenge. But Dom takes the chair and telling her, you can't win the title like this. And it's like, well, yeah, you're right. Actually, yeah, you are saving her from getting herself disqualified. And honestly, it's a much smarter way to get the chair into his hands than I was expecting. So I give him credit too for that. Oblivion to a big kick-out spot. It's like, oh, okay, maybe it's just him working distraction, but it's a kick-out. But it's used to set up Dom sliding the chair in and set Liv for a second oblivion onto the chair for the win. Commentary reminding us instantly of Dom's previous muck-up in Saudi Arabia, trying to at least sell a different world where Dom's mucked it up again. He's a complete idiot. The commentary seemingly were just immediately focusing on it being that again. I'm watching it being like, if you listen to the commentary, they tell you the story that the show's trying to tell. But as I've been saying, I've been told the Christian and Chris Jericho story, and I recognise all of the beats, but commentary is telling us a different story. That in no world are Dom and Liv together, Dom's just a muck-up. And I'm like, but that's not what you've told me on the screen. That's not what you've told me. Setting up the expected moment, Dom snogging Liv with her still as champion. It's just the way that they was kind of produced and set up, they seemed to go at it in a way that made sure it had the least fire possible. So it was really strange. But I've seen there's a lot of people really invested in this and who had big reactions to it. And I was just like, oh, but even that moment, it wasn't done like that. Well, I think part of it's a commentary. I'm trying to think, like, what was it that took the momentum away? Meaning that me, it was kind of the nerdy way of watching it, being like, well, why didn't it have the momentum to get the really big pop that it probably they thought it was going to get? It wasn't a nothing pop, but it felt like it was produced to be so much bigger than it was. Like, more of a, oh, than Cole and McAfee's anger and fury to the point of being allowed a swear. Just like, but I think part of it is the commentary after the match instantly going on about the Saudi Arabia being like Dom's a muck-up. Nothing wrong about bringing up the Saudi Arabia bit. That's like a nice little detail, a nice little callback. But then instantly having the commentary trying to really direct us in a certain way, I think that does then take away from the moment of them doing the reveal. Just because they are so, like, he's such an idiot so strongly that I think maybe don't direct the audience so, or try to direct the audience so firmly directly, just be a bit looser with it. Don't be so, like, hard-handed with the way you're trying to guide them. Be a bit softer with it. Bring up the Saudi Arabia thing and just gently guide them instead of being like, oh, this is, oh, no, go this direction because we don't want you to expect the twist. Like, we've been expecting it for a week or for months. Like, it's fine. It's fine. I did like, though, the Judgment Day immediately showing that anger backstage, making the world actually feel lived in. Like, rather than waiting for Monday for the consequences, immediately Priest is pissed. Like, yes, I like that. I like that part of the kind of production order. But yeah, the match was fine, but it was very antics-driven and all about the soap opera drama. So if you don't like that sort of thing in your wrestling, or that's not the reason you watch, then this certainly wasn't for you at all. When they were allowed to go, they were so good. But they just weren't allowed to go because it was a shenanigans soap opera match. Speaking of another match, I was kind of just like, oh, that's a shame. The Intercontinental Championship, Sami Zayn versus Bron Breakker.
And so is Sami Zayn, maybe a different dimension.
That 23 mile per hour rope to rope speed about split Zayn in half. Cover by Breakker. Welcome to the Bron Breakker era.
The show continues. The show of stuff we've set up happens now. Breakker as the IC champion, the end goal of his elevation. The part I wasn't expecting was how well they positioned Sami as a champion, set and ready to immediately slot in as a world championship, like, challenging main event lad once the wrist reign is over. This match here, though, with the crowning moment with Bron Breakker, the story I've been telling over the summer, I've been one of the few that don't mind the Bron Breakker loss at Money in the Bank, because it actually gave something for his character to overcome. From the levels of the Cody animosity, but it, because it's a type of setback which actually elevates the champion. And in that way, when Bron Breakker actually beats him, it's elevated them both. But this title match was really only given the time to be a momentum carrier. It's like, oh, you put Sami Zayn passing the torch to Bron Breakker after all this time, and its place on the card is as the momentum carrier. It's like, oh, like, oh, that sucks. Rather than really being in any spot to like blow up to reach any spectacular heights. Not that Zayn knows that. Like, a lovely little note of Breakker charging into the ring post right at the start, with him launching into action a little too overzealous. Then that ouch is the reason he's either caught or unable to put Sami away later on. In the end, amping up, lowering the straps and running the ropes like only he can for a second mighty spear. And I will say, Bron Breakker hits the spear so well, I kind of want to add him to the list. Like, only Darby Allin should be allowed to do Tope. Only Takeshita can Blue Thunder Bomb. And only Breakker can spear. Just, they all hit them too well that when I see other people doing them, they just all lack in comparison. It's like, I love the flow with the Sami Zayn Blue Thunder Bomb, but after watching Takeshita's, especially the one from Forbidden Door, like, if somehow you're listening to this on the Social Suplex Network, which is a very more pro AEW network, if you somebody haven't watched Forbidden Door, you haven't seen the Blue Thunder Bomb I'm talking about, to catch on to Phantasmo, you go and watch that Blue Thunder Bomb. It's the best Blue Thunder Bomb I've ever seen. Or one of the best. He's hit many great ones. I think he did one to Darby Allin off the top rope as well. Like, his Blue Thunder Bomb is so good. But especially that one against Phantasmo, it's just absolutely spectacular. So after this match was when we got our next little breaks. This is where we got Stephanie McMahon in the crowd waving, sat next to two empty seats with two WWE employees behind her for the shot too. It was like, is there not really anywhere else where you could have sat her to make it look like the crowd was just a bit more full rather than, you know, two empty seats, two employees who are there to make the shot look more busy? you got a whole arena full of people. The Slim Jim Savage moment of the summer set up the match with the transphobe. Like, I'm at a point where I'm annoyed at myself that I didn't stop covering his segments from day one. Like, I knew who he was. I knew why he was controversial. But I happily covered his telly stuff regardless. And now, like, just look what he's using his platform to do. Spreading hatred, misinformation, transphobia. And when Nick Aldis has to be subtle in wearing colours of trans support. No more. I'm done. Especially, like, as an English person, seeing what's been happening in our country this past week. It's like, nah, none of it. Go away. Don't want anything to do with it. The WWE Women's Champion, Bayley, passing the torch to Nia Jax.
And I don't think Nia Jax is done there yet. Bayley up and down again. And now dragging the carcass to the corner. Jax from the second rope with an annihilator.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
And for good measure, a second one by the Queen of the Ring, who now calls herself champion.
Our first Royal of the Night getting their championship match. Nia with a right look on her. Is that the Shota Umino, I'm not winning, grumpy grump face? Or is it the I'm winning, but I've got to be bad. Trying to hide my smile. Trying to hide that I'm so happy. Face. Big Power Nia tossed Bayley around in the early going as the match went along, the champion finding ways to swing in tads of offense. Very muted atmosphere from the crowd as the sun sets down. A reaction though, as Nia climbed up onto Brett's rope to jump onto her bum. A kind applause as she kicked out of the subsequent Bayley to belly. The first real reaction coming from Bayley kicking out of Nia sitting on her. But no one kicks out of being sat on. Kicking into the final flow with Nia chat-chatting and immediately paying the ring post price. Bayley going for a dive like Darby, but paying the price too. For there is only one Darby Allin. I said it earlier. Nia standing up for what's right and catching her in a fireman's carry to fall back into the Samoan drop. Only Darby Allin, she says. She definitely said that. Back into the ring for a bum charge into the corner, but the big sit is stopped for an even bigger powerbomb. Bayley really impressive in her stalling of the powerbomb, keeping her held up high. Elbow drop kick out, crowd into the flow, and it's Tiffy time. Clocked off the apron, it looked like she got the better of Nia too. Only for the champion to be met with two oof jackknife power bombs, two quick sits downs on, and we have a new champion, Nia and Stratton, celebrating in the ring as the plan comes together? Nia Jax is your new champion. She's been far, far better than she was in her first run, and really, really just building up momentum nicely. It felt like they decided from the moment, like before the draft, it's when she got drafted over, it was like, no, she's going to be champion at SummerSlam. It felt like, you've improved so much that immediately we're going to do it, make you the top heel on the show. And they also aligned Miss Money in the Bank with her. We'll see their animosity build over the course of time. Speaking of animosity, Drew McIntyre versus CM Punk, the hottest feud of the summer, one of the mildest matches on the show. Again, this was another one where I felt a little bit let down and I was just kind of just like, it's fine. I think this was the match for me. When this match was fine, this was when I just kind of settled into a groove and I wasn't expecting anything more, because this was the match where I was expecting of whatever bar this sets, this will be like the peak point and then the show will kind of move around it. But when this one was just fine, it's like, oh, okay, we're hitting an average tonight. We've settled on this kind of level and we're just going to stick with it.
Pickings, you understand me?
two long entrances really set to pop up the match, giving it the gravitas the successful build has declared it worthy of. I want to say as well that I saw quite a few people who have really enjoyed this match, who talk about it so highly, exactly what they wanted from it. But I immediately go, wait, who are you? I thought I respected you. What do you mean? Because it was, again, way too focused on the storyline type of thing, where having story focus is fine, but when you're doing it in every match and no match is really allowed to have just a way where they're telling this story but through the wrestling, instead we're having the wrestling stop to tell the story and it's happening every time. Like the story and the flow somewhat stopped for a beat to happen. A outside of the match storyline beat to happen. Sami Zayn Bron Breakker. It wasn't given any time. It was a momentum carrier. So you're talking 2.5 stars momentum carrier because they've not been given the opportunity to bat any higher than that. So they've batted as high as they can. Really great with lads. But I guess that's the only match of the night. That's the only one. Yeah, running theme, especially with their big matches. Personally, because I love the story being told through the wrestling, seeing this being the conditioning of what to expect, especially with fans really liking it, and I'm watching it being like, oh no, this is where that thing of... me starting to feel old as I don't enjoy the when the separation happens. I can see it happening. I'm like, no, please don't. Please don't condition the audience to expect the way for storylines in wrestling to be told in a way where the wrestling has to stop for the story to be told. No. You can tell it through it. You can use the moves that they're doing and everything to tell the story. You can do it. That's what I love about it. You see that all the time in AEW. I just got that feeling watching this match that it's the doom of all of professional wrestling. But the actual story they were telling, it's been almost a year since Punk last wrestled a singles match at AEW All In, and it's 10 years since his last singles match in WWE. So, how did he do? Both lads got into lamping at the bell, giving Seth the opportunity to lay down the law. As soon as the two brawl outside, the crowd started chanting, "We want tables," right on cue with the beat. Not even a match with a build this loved can escape the claws of conditional reactions. Them having to dull the audio for that, and boost the pocket singing Seth's theme, meaning the announce table swing, Drew McIntyre does CM Punk, has no audible impact with the ringside mics dueled for the moment. It's like, ah, there's no impact moment because he had to turn the mics down because they were chanting "We want tables" from it and wanted to get that feeling instead that they invested those in the ring. Rollins just egging both lads on to beat each other up. But when Drew grabbed a chair and tried to convince him to use it, Seth refused to let the Scot use it. The Seth ref spots increased in number as the match rolled on, a genuine great reaction to Punk snatching the bracelet off Drew's wrist, a nice double whammy with that followed by a snap claymore near fall. At this point, fine with the bracelet stuff. Like, it's all right. The animosity, the way they developed the animosity during the feud was fine. And the way that at this point it had been incorporated in the match, fine. It's the second half where we get our next dumb babyface moment of the night. Where it's kind of like, okay, that was a little bit of a step too far for like the believability of sort of it. Punk finally able to amp up into the GTS. But with the big lad on his shoulders, he spots the bracelet on Seth's wrist. The man genuinely having put it on, picking it up off the mat like a referee, just like a good referee that he is. Punk taking personal issue as Seth tells the angry man, "It's not always about him. We don't want you here," shouting that stuff. GTS to the special ref. Punk's paranoia costing him as pro wrestling reality folds back in on itself again. Kick to the dick, stiff claymore, and the slow 1, 2, 3. Commentary saying, "Punk's emotion was blind with rage and his emotions got the best of him." And the match was fine. But it's that second half. It's that second half where the bracelet becomes a bit of a joke, becomes a meme. This is the moment that made it a meme. This bit here. It's this section where you see Seth Rollins is on it and the big dumb baby face who's got the match won completely just loses it seeing it on Seth's wrist. And you get your big pop from the crowd as they realise that what CM Punk is seeing and how he's interpreting it. Because in the build, I personally didn't mind Seth's insertion just because, like the idea that at WrestleMania it was set up of, it wasn't just one of them, it was the fact that all three of them were in that little mix. You stuck a Drew in with the injury stuff from the Royal Rumble, played that for Drew's demise at WrestleMania, so we set up their feud throughout the summer. But also, the stuff that had been set up before the Royal Rumble to make sure that he would be invested in CM Punk going for Seth's title beforehand, That was already there. So all of that hatred that was brewed was already there. So when he inserted Seth, suddenly you've got this mixture of stuff where it's all playing quite nicely, where you are also building Seth versus Punk as well as building Drew McIntyre versus Punk and kind of interweaving them all together. We're going to spin off and if someone like more, spin off into it. So it all felt like it was building really well. But then the second half happens and the bracelet becomes a meme. CM Punk just completely forgetting everything that's around him and just zoning in on the bracelet, just seething at the mouth, going absolutely crazy, just a complete ill regard for the match and rightfully losing, looking like a complete idiot. Again, that's why I read out the quote from the commentary. Listen to the commentary, they will tell you the story they're trying to tell. Punk's emotion was blind with rage and his emotions got the best of him. That's literally the story they're telling. They're the words that they said in the moment on the show, what was written for them to what say do. But it was, you know, it was what it was. I've disappointed in the matches because it was another one which whenever they started to kind of build up a flow, it would enter a story beat or whatever. It didn't feel like a match which was allowed to flow that strongly. I wasn't expecting a lot from it because it was a special guest referee. And because that's normally how these matches go when it's special guest referee normally. So I wasn't really expecting anything different. I thought they could maybe elevate it a bit, but when they hit the batting average, and I was just like, oh, okay. They win for a okay night. Like, all right. And finally, the last one I'm going to be talking about. The World Heavyweight Championship, Damian Priest versus Gunther.
And Priest now with a shot to heaven to Gunther. Priest looking to capitalize. Claws toward the cover.
Gunther trying to...
Hook of the leg. Shoulders down. What the hell? What are you doing, Finn?
Come on!
Finn, what are you doing? I don't think Priest realized what just happened.
A really unique circumstance of WWE booking themselves into a road with two decent directions to turn off of. How unique for WWE. This short program with Gunther has really made things click for Priest's character as champion. But that could also be another feather for the challenger. Like, you want your champion to be the best wrestler that elevates everyone he steps into the ring with? Well, here is Gunther doing exactly that. Priest bringing the stiff strikes and trying to dance the challenger's style. Busting Gunter's chest open after chopping the Austrian so hard. Austrian, keyword Randy Orton and One Night More. Austrian. The crowd cheering about something else entirely as these two exchanged thumpers. The strikes the champion was able to land earlier started to get countered into physical storms from the challenger instead. Finn Balor out to ringside to hype up his man as it appears the match might be swinging away from him. I was like, oh, okay. We've had a nice little actual story told through wrestling. Out comes Finn Balor for the story to interrupt the wrestling. Not even my Gunther match is safe. Like, oh no. Gunther booting the Irishman, turning around to an amping Priest waking back up. A nice boot rebounded with clotheslines nailed with oomph from Priest. Razor's Edge, south of heaven. Balor lifts Gunter's foot onto the ropes. So he hit the Razor's Edge, hit the south of heaven, and it seemed, in that moment, Priest had to be like, mate, you're in the middle of the ring, and Gunter's like, oh shit. Priest then rolls him to the ropes. And Sarah from Trish and Sarah tweeted out on the things that, just like, he's rolled him to the ropes. So like, yeah, that's what happened. The crowd didn't care. So like, the WWE fans, they couldn't have given less of a shit. Like, it's almost like nothing had happened to them. And my instinct was, ah, well, that sucks. That sucks. But it also seemingly didn't matter for the mass wide audience. Balor there, he's got to be at the ring post because to do the huge big angle for the Judgment Day thing, he's got to get his foot hooked onto that rope by Finn Balor. Balor himself immediately turning around and holding his shoulders like he does as the demon, like the way he's holding himself. He's like, oh, I like that because that's the way that he stands when he's the demon. A nice little note. Gunter locking the sleeper from behind. Priest fading as Balor stares the man down from ringside. It's not that easy, but in constantly going after Balor, the ball was taken off of Gunter. Yet another sleeper, and Gunter is the World Heavyweight Champion. And also, a little note, really liked Gunter noticing the bleeding by watching the big screen, meaning it felt natural when Priest saw what Balor did through the same method later on. Because during the match, he sees Balor hook him. And it's just like, oh, but because that doesn't seem out there or weird at all, because we watched Gunter notice he was bleeding on the big screen. It felt so natural then for Priest to see Balor hook him the leg. It's like, yeah, within the world of this match, this worked really well. Overall, it was a show with moments which span characters and the way the WWE world is with their factions and things. It spun things off into wildly different directions. All of it extremely expected. None of this is left field. It's all what you would expect. Because I do think strongly that predictability isn't always bad if it's foreshadowed and makes the most sense and is the most hype way to go. And this felt like a show where almost every decision for where they went with something was the correct decision. But the show itself was very average. Very average to watch. Unless you massively care about, like, moments. If that's the reason you watch it, for the soap opera stuff, if that's the reason you watch it, then, oh, this is the greatest show ever. But if you care more about the actual wrestling part of it, then this is an extremely average show with a lot of fluff in between. Don't watch it live. Watch it with the ability to wind through or at least skip. Between this match and the main event was a whole 30 minutes of nothing. Half an hour where nothing happened. Like, that is long period of time. SummerSlam, it's fine, wasn't it? I warned you I'd be saying that. Yeah, it's fine. Anyway, before I go, let's very, very quickly just run down in fast style what happened on Monday Night Raw. Let's do a little intro thing just to like give us a little break from SummerSlam. It's going to be like a mass other notes, essentially, where I just blitz through stuff. So just so I don't give a future imp like a 2 hour thing to edit. So anyway, let's go over to the Raw after SummerSlam to Baltimore. Judgment Day, no more. That's right, you hear the music. Gunter with the gold kicked off the show. You deserve it, the conditioned response. But I know you don't from those engaged in the story actually did bubble up, so you know, baby steps, baby steps. The big surprise here as Smackers Randy Orton strolled on out, like, what are you doing here? That title looks damn fine hanging over your German shoulders. You're not going to affect him there, Gunter? Like, he's not German, mate. Not German. I did like the King of the Ring botched ending being used now as a catalyst for this feud for Bash in Berlin. Is that what it's called? It's called Bash in Berlin. But yeah, they're going to have the match in Germany. So, also, Damian Priest came out with his babyface fire, immediately calling out Finn Balor. The Irish Man instead appeared on the Tron, using Priest costing him in his own title match at SummerSlam last year as his motivation for the villainy. Talking as well about the No Leaders thing that changed when Priest became champion to survive in the group, it's being not to Balor's liking. And he's going to be a patient villain. He's going to wait to get his piece of Damien. But it won't just be him. The camera pans out to reveal the new Judgment Day. Finn as leader, JD's right hand, Carlito the... Well, Carlito's there. Then there's Dom and Liv. Which set off later in the show to kick off a third hour was Priest versus McDonough. Match yourself. Whatever. But for me, absolutely love the ending. The ending was amazing. It's also doing its job in establishing the former champion in his new position as a top babyface guy on Raw. Both JD and Carlito down. Balor instigating the jump in. Morgan and Dom clobbering too. Also making sure to establish the new group dynamic for the baddies as well. Liv Morgan saving Balor being bombed and Dom stomping along with her onto Damien, which calls out Rhea Ripley as she caught Liv and threw her into the ring post before teasing, bombing her through the announce desk. Then the best ending to it all, Rhea just straight up headbutting JD before Priest hit one of the darndest chokeslams I've ever seen. Like, just the way that McDonough just kicked his legs out at the apex, it just made it look so awesome. So good. It's such a great sound. Big Loser, CM Punk, who lost as the big loser that he is, kicked off the second hour to make sure you came back after that first ad break, because the first hour was commercial free, so second hour kicks off with CM Punk. I don't think I'll ever understand how so many American television viewers tune out or flick over during an ad break. Like, if I'm watching a thing, I'm watching a thing. I will put up with those minutes of adverts. I'll put up with it, I'll sit there. To actually channel hop and change the channel when it goes to an ad break? That's not an attitude we've got over here. It's not a thing. It's strange to find out that it's a genuine thing. Lots of people change the channel during an ad break. It's generally real. CM Punk is a big loser. He lost because he's a loser, but he's happy because he's back. All right, I believe you. A classic little thing of WWE moving on to the next stage, but in order to move on to the next stage, they can't have a period where he's going to be down about the loss, meaning you end up not really selling the loss. And there, I love it. I prefer the world where wins and losses actually matter. Whilst in this, it's seemingly the only thing he cares about is a bracelet. The only thing he cares about is being back and in there, being able to wrestle. So the loss doesn't matter. All right. What's the point then? Like, hey, this works if the other lads don't let him move on that easily and they keep teasing him or whatever. Swinging into throwing a challenge out to Drew for a second fight. Okay, there we go. But there's another lad burning to wrestle him. See what I burn it down. Sethy Boo, Seth Rollins strolls on out to the ring in his all black Hangman Page cosplay. Another cowboy looking for a fight with Punk. Drew McIntyre gloating out in the crowd with the fans to prove how easy it is to anger Punk up with that bracelet again. It's almost just like, oh, as soon as he sees it, as soon as he does it, it's like, oh, starts foaming at the mouth and charging away. It's like, all right. With a nice other surprise for the night, Bronson Reed charging out of nowhere, following up on his promise to Adam Pearce early in the night. Still awesome to see lads continuing to be booked to follow up on their words from backstage GM promos. Reed properly taking out Rollins with six tsunamis, referees being like, oh no, no, and the crowd being louder and louder for each consecutive splash. And I'm watching it being just like, finally the crowd has got something to react loudly to Jonah about. They've finally done it. He's been having banger matches, been on really great performances, especially for the way WWE produce their shows for the television. He's been standing out, and then he just won't get a reaction the next week, and then he won't be on the TV, and then they'll try it again. It's like, it felt like at some point it was never really going to get to a point, but no, they actually responded to this. And the main event was the Wyatt 6 in-ring debut against the Creed Brothers. A nice little touch that I didn't realise was that this is the same city the Wyatt family made their main roster debut in 11 years ago. Gacy was the last man to get his VHS tape promo talking about his character, so we got that to set us up right before the ad break, before the main event. Chad Gable and his baddie group, now named American Made, also got the generic as hell theme. Like the directive was like, just make it vaguely America, but also with like no notable notes about it, please. That's just if you have watched Monday Night Raw, I dare you, right now, hum the theme. What is this theme? You heard it. It played for. You came out to it. You would have heard the actual main beat of Pete. What is this? What is it? Can you even get vaguely close? That'd be my thing is, yeah, can you get, you don't need to be accurate in your head, that's fine, that's absolutely fine. But can you get, like, close to it, or is it still just a jumble of noise? They haven't really figured it out. Another crappin. Also for the inverse, for the Wyatt's entrance, they came out to Bray's final theme, and for me, a really nice touch with the lantern just on the chair with smoke around it, and then Bo comes out and lifts up the lantern to walk out of everybody. Also, this is when it hit me properly that demasking last week was a smart move. Like, a needed beat to save us from having to try and take the lads wrestling in their full spooky spook masks with their characters seriously. Like, no, that was a needed beat last week, so that we're all set to just watch them wrestle as the guys they are. Also, really like how Gabe and the Creed brothers wrestle together. Like, yeah, of course, they definitely would be totally up my street. Really enjoyed them. Gacy also given the time to shine with some of the spots, showing he's more athletic than folks were probably expecting. Like, good idea, given he's the only lad that the main roster fans like aren't going to be that familiar with. And then Roman got his opportunities to pay homage to Brody, which is both like heartwarming and breaking to watch each time. Like, honestly, after watching this, I'm not ecstatic about watching any of these lads in singles matches, but as a unit, yeah, it totally works. Double Uranagi to the Creed onto the announce desk by Loomis and Gacy, leaving poor Gable all on his poor lonesome. Gacy powerbombing his teammate onto the man before that same lad climbed up high to splash on down for the win, going off air with flashy lights, with them all gathering around the lantern in the ring. Like, I'll tell you, the crowds are really into this group. Like, the reactions have been so strong so far. They are properly over with that crowd. But that is it for Monday Night Raw for my getting through it and the quick other notes. So yeah, it's a show which I was excited to see, just in terms of the what would the balance of the show be like, given the new dynamics kind of across the board. He got a new IC champion. He's got a backstage interview. There's no Sami Zayn, no Jey Uso. I assume maybe because they might be Survivor Series bound, or you know, just to give a little bit of time when I'm there. Gunther as world champion. Big thumbs up. Wasn't expecting the Randy Orton type of match, but it's a decent like first title match for Gunther. Brandsbit's dead, but you know, like, it's like in terms of WWE critiques, like, yeah, it's It is. It is. If you vision it as something that only matters in draft season, then it's a bit easier to... Yeah. It's like, yeah, of course they jumped over. It's not draft season. Like, so they don't care anymore. They don't maintain the world. Maintain the world so I care in draft season. Your draft season will be hotter, WWE, if you make me care throughout the rest of the year. When he's convinced me it matters. And of course, the dynamic of the Judgment Day. And I did like the way that the new Judgment Day looked. There was a lot of positives from Monday Night Raw. Even if, again, show itself... fine. That's how I feel about WWE right now. I've got my attention split. I've got AW, where I'm only really at the moment, I've got time to watch Dynamite, not watching anything extra. Then I've got the G1 Climax taking up all of my other wrestling energy. So when I watch WWE and it's fine, I'm not going to spend a lot of time trying to come up with a way to explain why it's fine. I'm just going to be like, it's the Dave Meltzer quote of it is what it is. It is what it is. I found myself very quickly going into that. I was like, yeah, this is how they do it. So that's what it is. WWE, it is what it is. And it's... it's fine. It's fine. Anyway, that brings me to the end of my SummerSlam and, I guess, Monday Night Raw review. My 30 minutes bit at the start of the show. There's a reason why I highlighted the it's fine bit, because I was going to say it a lot over the course of the show. That's exactly how it is right now. Thoroughly enjoying the G1 Climax. New Japan are absolutely named that right now. Thoroughly enjoying AEW's build for All In. Really excited for All In. With WWE, they've just had their big moment to then do like a whole reset of stuff, and we'll see what happens with... I'm going to talk about SmackDown next week with the, I'm assuming, Roman Reigns return to the show, and how does that dynamic work with Cody Rhodes. But yeah, it's kind of a bit of a semi-new landscape in WWE. After the big shift with Cody win at WrestleMania, and with like the Sami title win and stuff, and I guess Bayley as well. This feels more like more subtler shifts. More expected where the storylines were going to go. It was a show of the things they told us were going to happen, happening. Which is not, doesn't sound super exciting. Sometimes that's not bad, but that was what the entire show was. It's like, and I like variety in my wrestling. I like a little bit of variety. The critique of, oh, I can't get into wrestling if it's no storyline and just a wrestling. And I'm like, on a wrestling show, it's absolutely fine to have one match which literally is just a match. It's fine. Because you've got the other matches where people are invested in the massive storyline. And for me, I don't like every match feeling the same, which is what kind of hit me about this show with SummerSlam, where the wrestling in all of them was pausing to let the storyline beats happen. It's like, there's no variety in the style. And you watch AEW, there's a ton of variety in the style. Like, yeah, there are some matches which don't have a lot of storyline, but the main matches all have big story and weight to them, like massive weight. Anyway, that brings me to the end of the show. As always, thank you for liking or listening, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated, or never taken for granted. I'll be back this time next week to talk about Fun Next SmackDown with the return of Roman Reigns onto the show, and Monday Night Raw with more of the fallout and the build towards Germany. So with that, bid you adios.